Being in a band has been one of the most rewarding things I've ever done in life. There's really nothing that can compare to being on stage while people are singing and dancing along to your songs. I just got to see this over the weekend. We played a show at a venue that I've loved going to for a long time, and then flipping it out, I'm seeing people who would maybe otherwise never interact in life, just vibing to music, and it is so magical. My guest today had a hair metal band back in the 80s, and then hair metal went the way of the dodo as grunge took over the world. But now he's getting the band back together. Todd Tucker is the director and writer of Rock Bottom, a new movie featuring so many impressive musicians. And don't worry, we'll get to them all in the episode. We're chatting about the inspiration for Rock Bottom, Todd's career as a makeup and special effects artist, and how he got hurt doing a very unathletic move during the making of The Passion of the Christ. Also, a bit of housekeeping. We're approaching the series finale of Good People, Cool Things, which will drop on May 8th. I'm not disappearing entirely, and I will certainly not be done podcasting. There are still plenty of ways to keep up with the sort of irreverent curiosity that has kept this show running for 4 years, most notably the Fun Fact Friday newsletter and the Sports Are Dumb podcast, and there are links to both in the show notes. More to come on this, but for now, we've got a wonderful episode to get to. I'm Joey Hell, this is Good People, Cool Things, and here's my conversation with Todd Tucker. Can you give us your name and your elevator pitch and also the type of elevator that we're riding on?
My name is Todd Tucker. I am the director of the film Rock Bottom. I've also been fortunate enough to work in Los Angeles, Hollywood, in the films and television as a special effects makeup artist and actor.
And where did the idea for Rock Bottom come from? Because I think it's a super cool concept. And I am just a huge fan of any kind of music-related movie. And I think it's so cool. So I'm just curious, where did the idea come from?
Well, it actually came from life experiences back in the mid-late 80s. I was a drummer lead singer in an 80s hair band. And then I became the lead singer. And then overnight, my career was destroyed. When MTV changed all of their programming and Nirvana took over, I moved to Hollywood and started working in the film industry, didn't pick up an instrument or sing a note for 30 years. And then right around the time COVID hit, my daughter asked me if I would ever consider getting my old band back together. And I said, hell no, but what a great idea for a movie. And then it also gave me the opportunity to pull out my drums, pull out my chops, and put together a band that was a real band for the movie and record an 11-song original soundtrack for the film that is now available also as a soundtrack album.
I love it. So do you hold a grudge against grunge, or are you forgiven now?
The problem is, you know, hair metal and all that 80s rock music kind of fell into the same category of what I remember happening to disco. Disco, when I was a kid, was the coolest thing in the world. And overnight, it became lame and stupid. Overnight, I remember that. And the same thing happened. I swear to you, I was one week in Guitar Center signing autographs because our album, our band was playing in Northern California, and we'd won Best Bay Area Band, and we were doing really good. And literally, everything changed. We were about to go on tour. Everything changed in one day, and I went into that same Guitar Center about a month later and had people pointing and giggling at me because I had long hair and looked, you know, big old blonde long hair. And it was very humbling, I will put it that way.
Now, we'll get into the movie, but I always like to ask any musician this, and it sounds like you might have to dig back 30 or so years, but what's your worst gig?
You know what? I will say this, my worst gig ended up being one of my favorite gigs. But at first I was like, oh my God. We got hired to play when I was really young. I was probably maybe 18 or so, maybe 17. My band got hired to play at a rehab center for kids that were going through rehabilitation, right? And I sold my guys on this in the band. They didn't really want to play it, but I sold them on it. And then when we got there, we were setting up everything behind the curtain, and then I looked through the curtain, and it wasn't rehab kids at all. It was all Down syndrome kids. And I look back at my guys and I go, guys, I made a mistake. And they're like, what? And they were so mad at me at first. And I went, guys, come on, let's just make it fun. Let's give them a rockin' time. Let's do what we would do and let them rock out. And we had the best time, so much so that we went back four more times and continued going to this place to go rock these kids out. So what I thought was going to be our worst was actually one of our funnest experiences at that time. So kind of turns around.
Oh, yeah, that's fantastic. And I think based on my experience from both playing music and attending shows, I feel like if you embrace it, the crowd's going to be on your side. Like, even if it's like, you know, it seems like everything's going wrong, if you're acting like, nah, we're having a good time, like, that's half the battle.
I will say this, and I don't know, maybe you've experienced this also. The only time it gets kind of weird is sometimes when you play at a venue where the band that you're opening for or is opening for you. No, actually, more when you're opening for a bigger band, if that it's a very different band, a very different music style, and their audience is there, sometimes that doesn't fly real well, you know? So, yes. You know, if somebody's come in and expecting to hear some really cool blues and you're just rocking out, sometimes not so good. So I had a couple of those, but you know, and we played some old people's homes and all kinds of fun stuff that you would think on paper doesn't sound good. But when you get there and you start hanging out with these people and rocking them out, people like to rock out. They like to let music be a release, whether they're young, old, it really doesn't matter. It's kind of the universal thing that makes everybody happy.
Yeah, I love it. I love just seeing two people who would never otherwise interact in a crowd together.
Right?
Just both right? Rock. It's so wonderful.
Music bonds people, I swear to God.
And speaking of music, Rock Bottom has just a barrage of people who have some sort of musical experience or ties. You've got Tom Everett Scott, who's a drummer in perhaps my favorite movie ever, That Thing You Do. I love him so much. You've got Jake Bon Jovi, who's the son of John Bon Jovi, and you've got Toshi Yanagi, who's the guitarist for Jimmy Kimmel Live's house band. So did having that rock and roll pedigree to work with, did that make things easier for this movie? Or was it like, oh, I've got so many people who like know what they're doing here that it's almost like a little intimidating?
No, it wasn't intimidating at all. It was awesome. it was a rush because I got to work with great people. Let me give you a few more names to add to that list.
Yeah.
So I got Sean McNabb playing bass on all the tracks. I've got, and Sean's from Quiet Riot. He's from a bunch of bands. I also have Terry Alouse singing. He's the voice of the old singer in the Rock Bottom band. And Terry is the lead singer for XYZ and Great White. And then I also got George Lynch playing lead guitar on one of the songs. George is from Dokken and Lynch Mob. I got all these guys. I couldn't believe it. And it was awesome because I got to write music with a lot of these guys. I wrote a lot of music with Terry and Toshi and Sean. And we ended up coming up with 11 original 80s sounding songs. And it was so cool. And everybody really brought a lot to the board. And for me to be able to just jump back into music after not doing it for such a long time and then get to interact with this level of musicians. When we went and recorded the music, it was the funnest time maybe ever in my life.
Did you find that the ideas came pretty easily? I mean, I assume being surrounded by all that musical talent, it's almost like riding a bike. Like maybe you haven't written a song in years, but when you've got that sort of creative energy.
Dude, I hadn't picked up an instrument. I hadn't sang a note. I literally like banished everything music from my life for like 30 years, I guess it was. I was pissed. I was like, damn, man, I got ripped out from underneath. And it got ripped out from underneath me. You hear those stories, and it's true, man. It happened to all of us that were in that time frame. And that's why, you know, when I started making the movie, I was able to pull all of that into the storyline. But yeah, I hadn't played at all. So the second I decided when my daughter asked me if I would want to, you know, do the band thing. And I got that idea. And it literally happened 2 days before the world shut down for COVID. And when the world shut down, I went, oh, that's what I'm supposed to do now. Okay, got it. So I just went, pulled my drums out, started just getting my chops back, started writing music again. and then started writing the script and putting the whole project together. And then just started meeting people like Sean and Toshi and all these guys. And it was a hell of a journey, man. But wow, it was probably one of the coolest things I've ever done in my career.
Ah, that is so fantastic. Yeah, I love hearing like what was born out of COVID. Obviously a terrible time for millions of people around the world, but I feel like the creativity that came out of it too was just very impressive. Very impressive.
It forced people to think differently and do different things. So it definitely, you had to think outside the box, and there wasn't a lot to do. So either you got creative or you got bored.
I like to call this show a little COVID baby sometimes too, because I started it in February of 2020. So right before the first few episodes, I had no idea what was coming.
Man, did it give you a lot to document and talk about?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I would say at least a few dozen of the guests started their business or, you know, wrote their first book or whatever during COVID. They were like, this was the kick in the pants I needed, or, you know, I had the extra time because I wasn't commuting or whatever the case may be. And I think I love seeing that so many people were, like you were saying, putting themselves to good use.
I can only imagine how many scripts were written here in Hollywood during that time frame. There's got to be like an Indiana Jones warehouse somewhere filled with all the scripts from COVID time.
That would be fascinating to see, like even if they're just like shorts of some of the highlights of them, but just to see what was going through people's minds during that time.
I tell you what, though, I got so lucky because when I started writing Rock Bottom and I started putting it together, I started pulling all these elements of things I remember, and I wanted to make it nostalgic, but I also wanted it to not only, you know, appeal to 40, 50 year old guys and people who were in the 80s that loved that, but I also wanted to figure out a way to pull in 20 year old kids. So I really based the story around the daughter, her friend, and Jake Bon Jovi becoming the new lead singer for this old guy band. And I got, if you don't mind, I'll just run this real quick. It won't take long. I just want the amount of talent that I got. It's an ensemble cast, 100%. But I got, like you said, Tom Everett Scott, McKaylee Miller, Jake Bon Jovi, Tila Dunn. I got Chris Mulkey, Brandon Butler, Toshi Inagi, Jeff Allen Jones, Daniel Kennedy, John Kassir. John's the Crypt Keeper, if you know who the Crypt Keeper is. And I got Zach Ward. Zach was Scott Farkas from A Christmas Story. I've got all these guys. These are all like totally professional, either amazing comedic actors or just amazing actors or amazing musicians who are now actors, like Toshi. And basically everyone here, they weren't far from their characters. They brought a lot to the board. We adjusted the dialogue and the script to fit their character the way they were comfortable. And then I had this amazing DP named Morgan Gardner. She's an up and coming DP. She's in her 20s, but she is like she's going to be a badass. She already is, but I mean, she's going to do really well. And then I had an amazing post company, a guy named Jeff and David Murphy, who run a company called Quest Pacific, who are friends of mine, and they just killed it because the sound, the edit, the coloring, all that stuff. I mean, if that doesn't hold up in a movie, your movie doesn't look good. It doesn't sell. And the sound was done by Jeffrey Allen Jones. The sound is just as important. And then all the music and everything. And then last but not least, I have my two producers, Ron Halvis and Kathy Macias, who basically dealt with all the nightmare stuff that happened so I could just focus on directing and acting, which was enough already. But the reason why I'm saying this is because there's an army of people that have made this movie and this album why it is what it is today. And it came out really good, and it's because of all these different people. So I feel I need to give those guys their credit every time I can, so that everyone knows the amazing people I was able to pull together as a team.
And I think it's a testament to what goes into making a movie. Like, it's such a team effort that you can't just have one person doing it all. Like, everyone comes together.
Not a chance. Yeah, right. No, and the thing is too, I learned is it's really important to, you know, have your department heads really know what they're doing. But we brought in a lot of younger kids too to come in, and they were established and had done stuff, but we also were able to teach them some, you know, the old and the new. And we did, it's the same like the movie. We were able to bridge the gap and kind of have a team of people that were multi-generational. So it was really cool. It gave a really cool vibe on set.
And another fun little full circle moment. You mentioned Zach Ward. I interviewed him on a previous iteration of this podcast, and he was just delightful. I had to ask about a Christmas story, and he told me that when he was getting beat up, it was fake punches, but the gloves were so wet from like being in the snow that it felt like real punches. Like the gloves hanging off of Ralphie's just jacket. And so he was like,
yeah.
So I wasn't actually beat up, but I was beat up.
So Zach and I go way back. I met him when I was working on a TV show called Charmed with these three witches, these characters.
Oh, yes. And yeah, a classic.
Yeah, I was doing special effects makeup, and Zach came in and I was supposed to do makeup on him. And we like right off the bat had an altercation, and we looked at each other, and he looks at me. He goes, "We are either going to be best friends or we're going to go to blows." And we look at each other, and By the end of the night, we were best friends, hanging out for years to come. So Zach has actually been in every movie I've made so far. In Rock Bottom, he plays the villain ex-lead singer, Kenny Cobra, and he's funny as hell. He's so good in it. But Zach is a really, really talented guy. He's a talented director. He can write, he can direct. I mean, he's multi-talented, and he's been in a lot of movies, and he's good in everything he does. So, you know, he's just a badass.
Has this been a common experience for you in meeting friends in Hollywood that you start off perhaps enemies?
No, I mean, it was just weird. There was just a moment, like literally we looked at each other and we were like, cause he walked in and he was on the phone, and whoever he was talking to on the phone, he insulted me to the person on the phone. Like, he said something really rude about me. And I looked at him and I said something really rude back, and he stood up and we were face to face. And he goes, "Dude, we're either going to be best friends or go to blows." And I was just like looking at him like, "I don't know what to tell you, man. I just got here. I don't know." And we just laughed and we looked at each other and we just clicked. But, you know, I've known Zach, and I help him on his projects. He helps me on mine. We're kind of like, just brothers at this point, but he's a really talented dude. And I've become friends with a lot of the actors that I've worked with as a director and even as a makeup effects artist, or an actor. I just tend to bond with, you know, people. If you're in that experience, it can be a bonding experience, obviously. So, and I'm a pretty, you know, easygoing guy. So it's easy for me just to hang out with people.
And that segues nicely into another question I always like to ask of a question you wish you were asked more frequently. What's it like directing a feature film?
Well, have you ever had a root canal?
I have not, thankfully.
Okay, well then let me see that. What can I prepared? It is really, really tough in the respect that you have to figure out a way to pull in multiple people. It could be 20 people, it could be 150 people, depending on how big your production is. You have to be able to, as a director, and I learned this because I was fortunate enough to go on big studio films as a makeup effects artist or as an actor and get to watch some of the greatest directors ever. And I'm talking like Steven Spielberg, Francis Ford Coppola, I mean, the big guys. I got to sit there and literally just study these guys and figure out what it is that they have that worked. But the trick is, as a director, you have to take the time to talk to everyone in your departments so they understand what it is your vision is, so they can help you and connect with you in your vision. Because if you don't do that, there's no reason for you to be able to go back later on and get mad at them when they don't give you what you want. You got to communicate to these guys, because no one would know that. You know, you have to be open to interacting with everybody and making it a group effort. And if you do it right, everybody gets excited and there's a positive energy. And it's a really, you can notice the difference when a set is working well and everybody's in a good mood. It really changes everything about it. So I always strive, you know, to try to motivate people and get them excited about what's going on and what they're doing. And listen to people, and you don't always have to take their advice, but if they give you advice and it's better than what you're thinking, don't have an ego and go, I'm going to go with what I want just because I came up with it. You're a team, you're a group. Take, you know, work with people who are better than you at what they do and take their advice as much as you can. But it's an ego thing. You have to be able to drop your ego, but still be the captain of the ship and have people want to be on your ship. And it makes a big difference when everybody is positively driving forward rather than people being upset and unhappy and dragging and having problems. And it can get overwhelming, you know, when there's that much going on. And there's a lot going on when you make a movie, and time is money. So it has to go smooth. And you also have to really, really take the time in pre-production to figure things out, because there's a lot of, you can't do it on set. It costs too much money. You've got to be prepared. So you got to do your homework. You got to, you know, have a good game plan. But it's really, really hard. But at the same time, as hard as it is, it's for me, it's like jumping out of a plane with a parachute. For me, it's like the excitement and the adrenaline is the exact same. So it's like a junky adrenaline to sit there and make a movie, have an audience watch it and have them cheer afterwards. It's just like watching that Ed Wood movie, man. It's like, it's just a thrill. So I can't really explain much more, but I can just say, if it's something that you're passionate about, you should really do it and just do the best you can.
Did you find that directing yourself, is that an added challenge at all? Or is it, or writing for yourself, or is it kind of similar to directing or writing for anyone else?
When I direct, I usually, most of the time, I stand right on the edge of the screen, of the where we're shooting. So I'm just right there near where everybody's acting. And I can feel when a performance is perfect. I can literally feel it. So I want to be as close to it as possible. And then I go in and I talk to the actors, and I can help motivate certain emotions and stuff. I don't like to be behind the monitor as much, but that's why it's important that I hire a really good DP and let them do their job and work with them and prep to line everything up, but be more on the edge of the scene there. So when I was directing and I was in the scene, I wasn't quite sure. I've done it before for cameos and things like that, or I've acted before where I wasn't directing. So I have some experience, but I wasn't sure how it was going to be wearing both hats. Because my actors were so awesome and amazing and helped me, just, they came prepared. They made it so easy for me to direct this film that it made it very easy for me to act and direct. And it actually, in a way, almost made it easier because I was in the scenes, in the moments, and I could feel the moments even more because I was part of it. And if it wasn't working, I could feel it. And I would just sit down with my actors and go, ladies, gentlemen, what can we do to change this? What would make this better in the conversation? What isn't working? And I would have them give me suggestions because these guys know their characters and they're in the moment. So you gotta let your actors have a little bit of freedom if you want it to be organic, you know. And as an actor and directing at the same time, it was great, man. I loved it. For, it might be different in a different type of movie, but for this movie, and to get to play drums again and do the music and everything, just literally, there's nothing better in the world.
And you've touched on this a little bit, that you have a pretty extensive background in makeup as well. And from my own experience, I mean, I'm not an actor, but I did the occasional high school project that maybe required a little bit of makeup. And I remember one time I had to be a zombie that I got to kill one of my classmates. And so, even just sitting for that, which was
nice.
Probably about an hour of makeup work. But that's something that stuck with me. I mean, like, what, 20, 25 years later. And so I'm just curious, in your extensive career, has there been something, whether it's a character or you know, something you had to design for a specific scene that stands out?
I played three different characters and was part of the creative team that built all the special effects makeup and all of the digital effects makeup, or not makeup, props and digital effects miniatures and all that stuff for Mel Gibson on The Passion of the Christ.
Oh.
And I played the Judas demon in the movie, and It was interesting because we did a design beforehand that was less of a monstrous look and more of a diseased look. And we did a test shoot, and Mel wasn't really happy with it. And he pulled me into his office, and he's like, "Look, I want you to make this." And he handed me a picture that we had designed of something in a shadow, but you couldn't really make it out. It was like an eyeball, like a wolf eye or something, but you really couldn't make it out. And he goes, "Go make it right now." And I had to go sculpt it and like show it to him before he left. And then I got to play it, and we shot it like a couple of days later after we got it all built. And it was really cool because, you know, to be directed by Mel was pretty amazing. But that character, I basically was in a chair swiveling into a shot and growling. And it was a VFX shot. So it was just, that was all I had to do. But Mel had me do it for like 4 hours. We just kept doing it and doing it and doing it. And I got up and I was like, "Wow, I'm kind of sore." Sure as heck, the next day I found out I pulled myself and had a hernia from doing it. And it was just in a chair. Like, I've done stunts in full werewolf costumes with no problem, but sitting in a chair and spinning for 4 hours, I gave myself a hernia. But I've got to play all kinds of fun. I've done a lot of creature stuff. When I first started in Hollywood, I was getting into makeup effects, and I did that immediately. My first big film was Hook, and I got to sit there and do the makeup effects with Robin Williams and all these guys. It was just amazing. And then a couple years into it, I started playing a lot of the creatures that we would make for the movies. And I played a lot of werewolves for different movies. And then when I got on Charmed, the series, I played a good portion of the creatures on Charmed, and would make myself up or bring crew on. So I had a really fun career bouncing back and forth between doing makeup effects and then playing creatures and puppeteering and eventually acting and just doing some regular parts too, and playing a dad and cop and, you know, different stuff. So, but it was all part of a game plan. When I moved here in 1990, I wanted to get into makeup effects, get into acting, and eventually write, direct, and produce. And it took me about 15 years to get to the right writing and directing and producing part of it. But then I got in and started to do that, and got to do pretty much everything I was hoping I would get to do. So I've been very fortunate and very lucky.
Yeah, that is, I was going to say, it sounds like you've done everything that you set out to do, which is, I feel like maybe not the most common thing. So that's awesome.
No, and again, you know, it's, when I go and I speak at schools and I talk to kids and stuff, I always just say, you know, the best thing to do if you are a passionate artist is to be very positive. Never give yourself boundaries. Just do everything. Even if people tell you you can't do it, just go do it to prove it to yourself, and just have a good time while you're doing it, because life goes very quickly. So it's important to enjoy yourself as much as you can in a business that is tough at times, but just have a good time, and people will respond to it, and they do.
Now, we know Rock Bottom just came out, but
yeah,
I'm sure you have other ideas percolating. Can we get a scoop of what might come next?
Well, so Rock Bottom came out on Thursday of last week on Prime Video, and then the album came out on last Friday, the day after, on everywhere. It's on iTunes, Spotify, it's all over the place. And I was kind of curious to see how it did over the weekend, and they both did great. We've got all these different countries reaching out that want it, and they're like, "Where the heck is this movie?" And so we're racing right now to try to get as many countries as we can and get it out, because right now it's only available on Prime Video in America and the UK. So we've got Japan and Canada, and everyone's going crazy. So that's awesome. I actually, I'm trying to set it up right now too, that there might be a Rock Bottom live concert at the end of summer. So there might be a live concert experience, which will be actors from the movie and illusions and all kinds of crazy stuff. More of like a comedic play with concert involved. So I'm setting that up to have a live concert show, and then we have two or three other projects that we are going to be talking to studios about. But I'm pretty much going to be pitching and doing a bunch of interviews and camera stuff and we're supposed to be going on Entertainment Tonight and Access Hollywood at some point if that all comes through. So we're going to really be pushing Rock Bottom for the next, I would say, at least 3 or 4 months as hard as I can. And then hoping that it does well, we'll go right into the live concert. So it's going to be a fun year. I set out originally to do this because I wanted to go on tour and play again. So the end goal on this whole thing is for me to go concerts.
Well, if you make it out to Austin, I will definitely be
awesome.
in the pit.
Yeah. No, I'll let you know for sure. It would be fun.
I might get a hernia out of it, but we'll power through.
Don't do that. Just don't sit in a chair and spin for 4 hours. Apparently, that's not a good thing. I found that out the hard way. It wasn't pretty. Mm-hmm. And I've been thrown through walls and been jacked by cords, and I've gotten my butt kicked in doing stunts in creature suits. And I sit in a chair and I turn and I get a hernia. I just don't. It's just weird. Just weird.
It's always the littlest things that cause the biggest injuries.
It's so not cool at all.
All right, Todd, you're almost off the hook here, but we always like to wrap up with a top three. And for you, your top three 80s metal albums Gen Z should listen to.
Well, I don't know for sure that my top three albums are considered metal. But they are rock and roll, and they're very similar to the style of the music that we put in Rock Bottom. So I have to say, one of the best rock albums of the 80s, hands down, is Journey Escape. I mean, that's got Don't Stop Believing. It's got Stone and Love, Open Arms. I mean, that was awesome. Oh, I'm going to give you another one, too. I'm going to change my the other one is Slippery When Wet, Bon Jovi.
Oh, nice.
That album. Off the charts, awesome. And then I'll say one of my other favorite ones, but this is earlier 80s, is I'm a huge Styx fan also. So Paradise Theater from Styx was a great, great album. So I think if Gen Z listens to those three albums, they will, much like the Rock Bottom movie, if you take a breath before that movie and watch that movie, I can almost guarantee you, much like listening to those songs, you will smile and feel good at the end.
Just like with this episode, we're smiling, we're feeling good. If people, we've kind of been touching on it, you can go to Amazon Prime to watch Rock Bottom. But if people want to learn more, where else can they find you?
So you can get all kinds of information at the Rock Bottom Movie socials, and we've got Instagram, we've got everything up. There's all kinds of videos, there's all kinds of behind the scenes stuff and great stuff. And again, you can get it on Prime Video. We're hopefully going to have it out to more territories. You can get the album everywhere, Spotify, iTunes, all that. And yes, at the Rock Bottom Movie. And we're gonna have a merch store with all kinds of fun merchandise and all kinds of stuff. So yeah, we're having a great time.
Well, fantastic. Todd, thanks so much for taking the time to chat. This was great.
Truly appreciate it. Thank you.
And of course, we've got to end with a corny joke. As we always do, what do you get when you cross a sweet potato and a prog rock band?
I'm not sure. What do you get?
A yam session.
Nice. I like that.
Thank you. Good People Cool Things is produced in Austin, Texas. If you were a fan of this episode, go ahead and hit that follow button. That helps more people hear the show. You can send me a message, joey@goodpeoplecoolthings.com. Thank you to all of the guests who have been on Good People Cool Things. You can check out all the old episodes via goodpeoplecoolthings.com. As always, thank you for listening and have a wonderful day.